Joe.
How you doing?
I'm doing good. How are you?
Good. Ready to kick this show off.
Yes, definitely. Welcome to Unscripted, everybody. I'm your host, Staggered Lee, and your other host is here, producer Joe. And I'm ready to talk about Dynamite.
I thought this was the best Dynamite Rampage combo that I've seen in a little while, with Rampage maybe even being slightly better.
Yeah, it really was. There was a lot of good matches, a lot of surprises, and we should just get into it, I think.
Definitely.
Well, it took place at Agonist Arena in Boston, Massachusetts. Opened up with Adam Cole versus Christian Cage. Christian looked just superb in this matchup.
Yeah, I thought it was a solid start to the show. Like, Christian really kind of kept up with Cole and made him look good in this opener.
Yeah, he really did. And the crowd seemed to be really awesome, too. Just you heard chants for both of these guys. And that, I have to say, that was a great crowd in this show.
Yeah, I had a friend that was actually up there that night, and he said the crowd was amazing for this all. Now, one thing that I wrote down was Jim Ross called this a strategic match. I wasn't sure what that necessarily meant, if that meant in ring or just the fact that Adam Cole and Red Dragon have been kind of feuding with Hangman and the Jurassic Express and Christian.
Yeah, I don't know how to interpret that. I didn't catch that.
And like, the match didn't seem like it was going move for move like you would think strategic would be, but it was a hot opener. Cole didn't drop his knee pad for the first knee strike, which was why it didn't finish Christian. And then eventually he got the eye poke with the knee pad pulled down in 1456.
Yeah, that was just a great match, I thought, and a great way to start off. Then we had Bobby Fish and Kyle O'Reilly. Sorry. Attacked Christian, and Jungle Boy in street clothes comes out, and Luchasaurus had his ring gear on, but they both ran out there for the save. And I guess that's setting up for Red Dragon versus Jungle Boy and Luchasaurus.
Yeah, it seemed like they were kind of setting up for two things, because after Jungle Express ran out, Hangman Page came out, and Cole said he's not gonna fight with Page till the title's on the line. And then Page gives Cole a title match at Rampage next week in a Texas Death Match. So it feels like the Texas Death Match is kind of the AEW go-to stipulation, or it's felt like that the past couple months. But that's going to be an exciting match and a fairly important match for Rampage next week.
Yes, I'm excited to watch it's really got my interest. And I'm just a sucker for death matches of all types, so it's great. I liked how Paige said, "You've got, if I were you, I'd get my affairs in order," and just
Really made Paige like feel like a champion and feel like a dominant champion, which is something I don't think he's felt like totally during his run.
Yeah, I don't either. It's taken me a while to get him as a champion. I think I'm just now starting to. I'm not quite there yet, though.
Yeah, and this was followed up by a Jay Lethal video package, just kind of, you know, further cementing his heel role in the company that he's starting to take on.
Yeah, I liked it. I didn't watch ROH, so it was a surprise to me, but I like Lethal as a heel. Watching him since TNA, and he's doing really well right now in that role. They got Sanjay Dutt with them too.
Yeah, that's been a good fit.
Yeah, and then they showed us Joe come out, which was another great surprise to me because I hadn't read any wrestling news or anything. And I'm getting in Lethal's face and choking out Dutt, and then that was a pretty powerful image.
Yeah, was that footage from the ROH show?
Yeah.
Yeah, because that set up Samoa Joe versus Max Caster in an Owen Hart Cup qualifying match. And Joe was looking brutal out the gate. I wrote down Samoa Joe is back with an exclamation point.
Yeah.
He even hit Caster with a tope suicida, which was interesting to see. I mean, I'm not well versed in old Samoa Joe matches, but I know he can be brutal in the ring. And
I don't think I've ever seen him do a suicide dive.
No, and it looked great, but he brought back the muscle buster and got the win in 2 minutes and 52 seconds. And even though the muscle buster can be a dangerous move, it's good to see him bring it back.
Yeah, he did tweak it a little to where it's more like a suit than dropping straight down like he used to.
Yeah, there's probably got to be ways that you can like figure out how to make it safer.
Yeah, because it really fucked up Tyson Kidd in a dark match. And I think that tweaked it that way because I wrote that down. I said probably because he seriously injured Tyson Kidd in that dark match back years ago.
But, yeah, I mean, I'm sure when he was in WWE, he was probably trying to find ways to make it safer, and they just thought it'd be safer not to use it. But post-match, a video played with Sanjay Dutt and Jay Lethal. They said they're not going to ruin Joe's moment like Joe ruined theirs. Joe didn't answer Jay's calls for 4 months, saying that he only picks up the phone for billionaires. And next week, they're going to give Jay Lethal a present he will never forget.
Yeah, and I liked Lethal's attitude, too, saying he's going to do whatever the hell he wants. And just really putting an exclamation point on it. I can't wait to see what it is in New Orleans.
Yeah, I don't know if it was mentioned on the show, but this coming Wednesday, it's going to be Samoa Joe versus Minoru Suzuki. So maybe they could come out and somehow interrupt the match for Joe, or we'll have to see what it ends up being.
It'll be interesting, I'm sure. I haven't seen a lot of originality in these storylines. They seem like to be pulled out from storylines of the past sometimes.
There's definitely been elements of things they've reused.
Yeah, and I just think it, personally, I think it's too soon to reuse those ideas. But that's just me and how I like storytelling. But I'm sure everybody else, you know, would probably be 50-50 on that. I don't know. You guys could probably bring it up on page and tell us.
Yeah, definitely let us know what you think. And this post-match video was followed up by the Blackpool Combat Club backstage. They make mention of Brian Danielson versus Trent Barretta Friday on Rampage, Wheeler Yuta versus John Moxley Friday on Rampage. Two huge matches they're giving us, and Regal calls Danielson the perfect wrestler. Yuta has impressed them both, and Moxley said he's not going to be impressed till bones are cracking and it's raining blood.
I loved that line. I'm a huge John Moxley mark, in case people haven't noticed. He just comes across as a badass all the way around.
Yeah, okay. Now what did you think of this next matchup here?
Well, with Sean Spears having the, he had like the big entrance this time, and then MJF had commentary, and then it was Sean Spears versus Captain Sean Dean. He wrestles a pretty short time with Dean, and then once again Wardlow kicks security's ass, climbs through the ring to pretty much distract Spears, and it allows Dean to get a roll up the win.
He got that win in 3 minutes and 50 seconds.
Yeah, it was really quick. And Wardlow just smiled and pointed at MJF and Spears as he left. And he's sending a message to MJF, who, you know, standing in the ring. He's trying to calm down Spears. Love Wardlow, man. He's great.
Yeah, the way they've been building him up these past couple weeks has really kind of like pushed it. I mean, he was over anyways, but the way the crowd has been reacting to these, like fighting his way into the arenas, has gone over huge.
Yeah, it's great. And backstage, Tony was with the best friends and Wheeler Yuta talking about their upcoming matches on Rampage. Chuck tells Yuta that they love him and they want to be there for him. And then Trent comes to the mic and says he doesn't love Yuta, thinks he's a scumbag and a traitor.
Yeah, and one of the reasons is because Taylor said that they helped train Yuta. He sleeps on their couch. I believe they said they got him his gear. So you can see why Trent would feel betrayed in a way. And I mean, you can also see it from Yuta's point of view of just wanting to get better.
Yeah, you can really sympathize with both of us and identify with them.
The only thing that I don't have notes for is, since I watch the show on the replay on the TBS app, I don't get the picture-in-picture. So I didn't see what Sammy Guevara had on his note cards this week.
You know how I feel about picture-in-picture. I pretty much ignore it. It gives me a headache to watch. But
this
from
is
what
the
I
best
got,
use of picture-in-picture that I think they've had, having him with the signs. It's still dog shit because it's hard to read that little screen. But I think this is better than putting in-ring action during that time frame.
Yeah. Here's what I wrote. I wrote, Sammy Guevara comes out with his boards indicating it's time for a picture in picture, and then time for me to piss and grab another beer. Looks like Ty Conti is with me too, so it's probably a message to America Top Team.
Most likely. And yeah, these picture in pictures, I don't really know why they keep going with it. I'm sure it's just to keep the footage rolling, but I don't know how many people pay attention to the small screen during it.
Yeah, I don't. Even when it's a big match, I'm not. My eyes aren't directed to it. I try watching it times, and it just, like I said, it gives me a headache. There's got to be a way they can place their commercials. Anything better than picture in picture.
Now, coming off this commercial break, we had Kingston, Santana, and Ortiz backstage fighting with the Jericho Appreciation Society. This is a pretty wild brawl going all throughout the back.
Oh, yeah. It's starting off with Eddie throwing that TV.
That was kind of like at the end, because they had chased him down the hall, and then just as the Jericho Appreciation Society is about to go through the door, he throws the TV at him. Then they jump into the SUV and leave. And this is followed up by Kingston, Ortiz, and Santana going out to the ring, basically stating that he'll attack them whenever he sees them. Especially telling Garcia, like, he knows where he lives.
Yeah, he kind of laughed when, and I like how he said he pulled the Junkyard Dog in Butch Reed style.
Yep, and they're setting up for a big six-man match next week on Dynamite. This feels like it's got all the makings of a big fight feel, and I feel like he popped Jim Ross with that line about Butch Reed and Junkyard Dog.
Oh yeah, he popped me with it. I wrote that down. I'm like, damn, that his wrestling knowledge. You amaze me. Have you watched him on Dark? Like when he does commentary?
Yes, I have.
He's amazing.
And if you also want to hear another place where he's a big fan of 90s All Japan, like we saw from that shirt he was wearing a couple weeks ago. And he recently went on the Post Wrestling. I think you can see it on their YouTube. He talked with their long and winding Royal Road host, W.H. Park, about some 90s All Japan. And if you really want to hear him like nerd out about wrestling, that is an interview to watch.
Wow, okay. Yeah, I love hearing him talk wrestling. He's just got so much knowledge that it amazes me. But that's what makes him good at what he does, you know?
Yeah, and they followed this up with a Hook video package, just basically putting Hook over.
But it has the Danhausen shit in it though too, and
I believe there's some interaction, but I know Danhausen actually interacted with him on Rampage.
Oh yeah, that was a trash segment too. We'll get to that.
Yep, and that was followed by Jade Cargill and Mark Sterling. Jade introducing the baddie section, which she terms beautiful women with confidence. Marina Shafir is not allowed in the baddie section. She's tired of MMA losers coming in and wrestling failures as well. If Shafir is referred to as the problem, she is the problem solver. Decent promo for her. I feel like this is just trying to like hype us up more for this Marina Shafir match, which I am getting excited for, but I'm worried that Marina won't win when I think she should.
I'm worried on how they're both going to look in that ring. Because to me, they're both still pretty green.
They are. Marina, more of an actual fighter, so I think she's going to look better. I'm just hoping that Jade can like catch up to her level.
Yeah. Yeah, because Marina does have a lot. She does have some experience on and some more background than I know on Jade, anyway. But she always tells Tony to cut the shit, too. I never understand what she's referring to, but it's become a thing with her.
Yeah, probably just trying to get over a catchphrase as well as being bossy, being assertive, kind of however you want to look at that.
Yeah, I'm still trying to grasp it, but then we had Alex Marvez backstage with MJF and Sean Spears, and MJF, if Wardlow shows his face next week, there'll be more security. And he directs his words to Captain Sean Dean and said he's going to injure him more than any combat sports injury or something like that.
No, he's going to injure him worse than he could be injured in combat, because Sean Dean was in the military.
Oh, all right, in combat. Now I get it. I'm a little slow, guys.
I mean, he mentioned it so quick, and I wouldn't have even known Sean Dean was in the military.
Yeah, I did from Dark, because they always mention it anytime he's on there. I guess that's why they call him the captain, but...
Makes sense now.
Yeah. But we have a tables match next, with Butcher and Blade with the Bunny, and they're against the Hardys, Matt and Jeff.
Yeah, it was any place I had seen it labeled as a tables match. And then as they're coming out, Justin Roberts announces it as a tag team tables match. And it only wins when both of your opponents go through the table. And there was confusion. Like, the match was good, but I feel like the rules confused everybody. Because the announcers seemed confused. My buddy who was there live said he was confused. I didn't get it.
They were on commentary trying to explain it during the match, too. They were like, oh, okay, well, that was a defensive move, or that was an offensive move that nobody was there for.
Trying to explain that it was an offensive move to your opponent that causes them to leave the match. And what's weird is when Jeff Hardy's eliminated, the table didn't even really look like it broke, but he
in the bottom, really.
Yeah, and then the Butcher's eliminated right after him. The Butcher doesn't leave and is still playing into the match. I don't know if this had to do with the save that Jeff did later with the table, but this is where I think the confusion started, with Jeff leaving and the Butcher not leaving.
Right. I was confused by that too. And then on commentary, they said, well, it's no disqualification. So yeah. I guess they better radio Jeff and tell him to get his ass back out there. I.
Well, I don't know if that played into the spot where they're doing a spot on the guardrail and it didn't look too good to start. And then.
Oh, yeah, it was awesome.
When they played their way back onto the mats, there was no table there because Jeff had returned and slid it out of the way. So I don't know if that's why Jeff did it, but that's what happened. And then the thing that confused me the most was Jeff, who was already eliminated, eliminates Blade with a Swanton through the table and gets the win.
Exactly. He's supposed to be out of the match.
Yeah, you would think the guy who's still legal in the match would be able to do the eliminating. But, I mean, this was a little bit of a clusterfuck as it was for them.
It was, but I enjoyed it.
Oh, yeah, it was a good time. It was just, as far as, like, what you'd expect from wrestling, it was very confusing. But
they do need to be more clear about their rules. I mean, the rules are what make professional wrestling fun.
Yeah. Now, Andrade comes out post-match with Private Party, Jose, and Bunny. And then Sting comes out to even the numbers for him. So I feel like we're still setting up to something between these two factions.
So I wonder why Darby wasn't with him.
That's a good question. Yeah, maybe he wasn't on the show because I don't think he appeared at all on this or Rampage.
Yeah, it was very conspicuous, you know, because usually lately Sting has come out with Darby and this time he didn't.
Yep. Now this was followed up by a quick segment with Christian Cage and Jurassic Express backstage. Christian throws his water bottle in frustration, it seems like. And then Jurassic Express challenges Red Dragon to a title match on Dynamite next week, even though their rank doesn't really warrant them getting a shot.
I think, addressed that in a later promo in Rampage, if I'm not mistaken.
Oh, okay. So
they say you were. Even though you weren't in the rankings, we'll make an exception for you, basically.
Okay. And this was followed by a Nyla Rose, Thunder Rosa video package, setting our first match for Battle of the Belts 2, I believe, with Rose versus Rosa for the AEW Women's title.
And I gotta tell you, I'm not excited about this. I'm not excited about Nyla Rose going after the belt anymore. I want to see somebody different.
What did they do with the first Battle of the Belts? Did they have a women's match on that?
I do not remember. I could look it up.
It's not overly important. I like that they're setting this at least in advance And if it's for Battle of the Belts, that's a week away. Maybe they just needed an opponent for that show. Does it make... If it is just an opponent for that show, does it make you any happier with the Nyla Rose pick? That they're just getting it out of the way, kind of on a one and done?
Because I don't... see a long story with Nyla. I like her. I think she's a great wrestler. I just am kind of tired of every champion. Nyla seems to be at the front every time. It seems the obstacle that they got to get through to keep themselves a proud champion, you know?
Yeah, definitely.
But Tony was backstage with Jamie Hayter and Tony Storm, who are both in a qualifying match for the Owen Hart Foundation tournament. And Tony, both of them agreed to no physicality. They did quickly get in each other's face and just basically gave each other heads up that they're there. They're not, because they're not going to be competing against each other next, or they may be competing.
Now, is it that they've both qualified for the tournament and that they could possibly meet up during the tournament? Because
that's
the
what
only I had was setting up for an interesting match during the tournament.
Yeah, it seemed like they were just setting up for a match, but it was, I think he said, you may meet. Tournament.
Oh, yeah. Now, this was followed up by Julia Hart versus Hikaru Shida in another Owen Hart Cup qualifying match. And I feel like this is the match we've been waiting for a few weeks.
Julia still has the eye patch, but she's showing that she's more aggressive and attacked Shida before the bell. She had some kind of disagreement with Griff and Brian and tells them to leave ringside.
Well, that's because she was choking Shida on the ropes with her coat, and they were looking at her like, what are you doing? And then that sends them off.
Oh. Way in the second that they showed that.
Yeah, and then that's where this match really picks up. Shida ran, jumped off a chair, and did a drop kick to Hart. Hart was definitely more vicious and heel-like in this match, but Shida hit a Falcon Arrow for the win at 7:45. And the note I have after that is, where will Hart go from here?
I'd like to see, is this beginning a slow burn on a story for her? Leaving the Varsity Blondes. It could be something like that in store for her. But Serena's music hit, and then Shida had her kendo stick, or Singapore cane, whichever you want to call it. And Serena came behind Shida. Shida anticipated it. She had a steel chair in hand, and they just, basically.
Yeah, getting us excited for that matchup when it happens.
Yeah, and I'm pretty excited to see it. They've been building it for a while. So I'd like to definitely see that match. But backstage, we have Alex Marvez talking to Swerve about his presence at the Grammys. And he talks with him about Keith Lee and their beef with Powerhouse Hobbs and Ricky Starks. And Swerve says it's not over. And he walks into the dressing room, and Starks and Hobbs quickly follow him. They attack Swerve. Then Keith Lee comes in and gets involved with the brawl. Keith put Powerhouse through a wall, and it wasn't very well built, and you could tell it was just put up for that segment. I'm sorry, but I call it as I see it. that was kind of annoying to me with the budget that AEW has.
Yeah, it was one of those things where they're just trying to make Keith look powerful. And, you know, then they kind of hit us with a Rampage preview. We're going to get Moxley versus Yuta, Willow Nightingale versus Red Velvet in an Owen Hart qualifier, Danielson versus Trent Barretta, Swerve versus QT Marshall. They put up a graphic for Battle of the Belts 2, Thunder Rosa versus Nyla Rose being official. And then next week on Dynamite, they've got Kingston, Santana, and Ortiz versus Jericho, Hager, and Garcia. And the tag title match with Jurassic Express and Red Dragon. So we're going to have quite the Dynamite this week.
Yeah. Yeah. And then we went right into the tag team championship match for the ROH and Triple H titles on the line with FTR versus the Young Bucks. They had Brandon Cutler with them. I love the ring attire and jackets on FTR.
Yeah, they're the old ROH logos, right?
I thought it was more of like lettering. That said FTR.
Yeah, I'd have to go back and check it out because I believe I didn't write the note down, but I think it was the ROH style gear that they had from the Supercard of Honor over the weekend, which had like the old ROH font on there. And this match was, God, it's got to be the longest on the show.
Yeah, they brought in ROH's announcer Bobby Cruz to do the introductions.
That was a nice touch. He's from the Boston area, so it makes sense to use him. But I like when they do these ROH title matches that they'll bring in sometimes like the announcer, or sometimes you'll even have like Ian Riccaboni on commentary.
Yeah. Yeah, I like when they do stuff like that very much. But they both start off, it was really technical. Really technical. And they just threw everything in there, including a hockey fight style fight that I loved. I marked out for that.
Yeah, FTR had responses for most of the Bucks' underhanded tactics. The eye rake, while the Bucks were in the double sharpshooter, seemed to change tide in the Bucks' favor. And I had the note down that this feels like the match that I was hoping for the first time they met up.
That's a great statement, because I think so too. I think this match did top it.
it felt way more exciting. And watching live, I was so nervous that the Bucks were going to win, because I was just convinced that they were just going to take it. Because the thing about them is they've wrestled in AAA. So if they won the AAA titles, I wouldn't be surprised. And I was like almost sure of it.
Yeah, I was thinking the same exact thing that you were about that they would take both those titles. And it did look like it. I mean, they hit the BTE trigger and at the got his foot on the ropes just right before the three count, because his hand did come down on the three count, but the foot was on the rope the three count. So that was really, that was close. And the crowd was solidly behind FTR, like you said. But what I liked is after that, FTR hit the slingshot powerbomb and the tombstone simultaneously, which looked really awesome. And then they had Matt in the position for the BTE trigger. The Matt spat in Dax's face. Then they both hit the trigger. And then after the trigger, they both kiss him on the cheek, which I busted up laughing during that. That was great. And then they did the big rig for the win, and I wrote great fucking match. I mean, this was a great night.
They got the win in 20 minutes and 7 seconds, and so FTR are baby faces now, right? That's what it would seem
it
like.
Seems the case. Aren't they, is the Pinnacle just slowly crumbling, or...
I don't even know if they're really a part of it anymore. I mean, the last we saw, it seemed like they were on like a really tenuous friendship. And I feel like as this Wardlow thing breaks out, they'll probably move away if they haven't already.
Yeah. It seems that they're fading it out, definitely. They haven't really mentioned the Pinnacle on commentary at all either. So I think you could be right. But then we have Rampage, and that starts off with the kick-ass match. Bryan Danielson, the American Dragon, and he's versus Trent Beretta of the Best Friends. William Regal once again is on commentary along with Taz, Excalibur, and Ricky Starks. Trent's really good in this match, but it seems like Bryan just keeps one-upping him during the match. Did you notice that?
Yeah, Trent looked really competitive. You know, it was hard hitting, but it just seemed like Bryan was always that one step ahead. And then you had the Busaiko knee, the Gotch pile driver. He kicks Trent's head in. And then sort of a LaBelle lock, but he was wrenching Trent's neck and got the 1339.
Yeah, I think that William Regal on commentary called it a reverse grabbit.
Okay.
Or it could be a reverse rabbit. I could have heard it wrong, but rabbit sounds about right. So, yeah, I noticed Excalibur was having a loss of words on that move. I'm like, does Excalibur know this move? And he did not. So, William came in. But backstage, we had Lexi Nair. She's with Hook. He's got his headphones on. He's eating potato chips. She's asking him questions, but he just keeps eating his chips. Eventually goes to walk out, and Danhausen pops out of a garbage can and tries to curse Hook. Hook just throws the bag of chips at Danhausen and leaves, and I wrote, this segment was pure garbage.
See, this is the first time I actually enjoyed Danhausen, and I don't enjoy him much. I don't know if it was just the fact that Hook isn't talking, or the fact that he's no-selling Danhausen.
I don't know.
I honestly got a kick out of Danhausen, like, going into the garbage, picking up the bag of chips, and asking if this is where Hook gets his power. That was funny, but Danhausen really isn't needed for this show. I hope...
I don't
somewhere, but right now it just doesn't seem.
I just am putting him with Hook, though. I don't want it to hurt Hook's credibility, you know, playing into the comedy.
No, I wouldn't say he's playing into it. He's a part of it right now, but he's really been no-selling it, which I don't know. If just in my mind it feels like he's not getting the stink on him, it's good enough for what it is. You know, I'm not crazy about it, but I don't want to see it like progress much.
Well, it gets me in a position to where I just want to see Hook kill him and just watch a really good squash match.
Yeah, I mean, maybe that's what they're leading up to.
Maybe so. But then we had Scorpio Sky, Ethan Page, and Dan Lambert in the ring. He stopped the open door challenge because he was just basically looking for someone to step up. And out comes Sammy Guevara with Ty Conti. And asked him in a very Jericho-esque way to please shut the hell up. And he goes on to tell Scorpio that the man makes the title, not the title makes the man, and he's making the title look like nothing. They call Dan Lambert a sexist piece of shit. Then Lambert cuts a promo on Sammy and on Ty and says he should talk more about what he can do in the ring and less in what he can do in the bedroom. And Paige chimes in and he looks at the camera and tells his daughter he prays to God his daughter doesn't end up like Ty. I cracked up during that. I'm sorry.
Yeah, I think I wrote down that Ethan Page was the best of the promos out there during that segment, which is surprising because he's never really stood out for that with them. And this is going to keep up until Sammy gets a match, which I hope is soon.
Right. He said there's a big surprise next week, so we have another surprise in the week. Then after that, there's a video package by Chris Jericho on QT Marshall calling him the sports entertainer of the week. I thought that whole thing was kind of trash. I don't know what they're... Are they showing some kind of alliance with each other? Is that the message?
For the past couple weeks, Jericho has been naming his sports entertainer of the week during the show. So I feel like this is just another way to get that over.
Okay.
Plus, it leads to the Swerve Strickland versus QT Marshall match that's up next.
Yeah, and during some gesture where he put his fist on his forehead, what does that mean? Do you know what that means?
I didn't notice it. I would have to go back and see. It might be...
It was almost like he was grabbing a unicorn horn or something on his head.
Okay, that, I was wondering if it was that. Swerve used to do that before. He has done that before on the indies.
Oh, okay. So it was kind of the mock Swerve then. Makes sense.
I was glad to see Swerve in this match. I'd prefer some more high-profile matches, but it was a decent enough match.
Yeah, I would... him with somebody other than QT myself too. I'm not the biggest QT fan. I just don't ever.
No, yeah. And Swerve won this with a back heel kick to the head and a win at 6:08, which thankfully it ended early.
Yeah, definitely. Then Ricky Starks got on the mic and he challenged Swerve and Keith match against him and Powerhouse on Dynamite.
And that is a more high profile match. I mean, Hobbs and Starks aren't the biggest, but that's like, you can tell he's going to be on his way to more high profile matches.
Yeah. Step up. It's a step up. That's for sure. Then they did a real short video package / promo by Marina Shafir, and she simply says, "Jade, I'm begging you to solve me." And I thought that was good for what it was.
Yeah, responding to Jade's promo from Dynamite and, you know, really, I think, establishing her as like a force to be feared. Or somebody that doesn't have fear going into this match.
Yeah, and they showed little snippets of matches with her during it, which kind of gave you a fight feel about her. Definitely going in the right direction, building this match up. Then we had an Owen Hart Foundation Women's Tournament qualifier, which is Red Velvet versus Willow Nightingale. And at first, I'm not a big fan of either competitor. I've seen them both. And Willow was really doing good during this match. The crowd acknowledged it, and I think she's kind of a hometown girl, isn't she?
Yeah, she's from New York, but I believe they said she went to college in Boston. I'm been to a couple indies in the Massachusetts area, and she's always gotten over big. They played a video of her during Ring of Honor that really got her personality over. And, you know, she's a good women's competitor. Red Velvet has gotten better as time has gone on. But I thought this was a good mid-show match. It was during this match that they announced Minoru Suzuki versus Samoa Joe. What else did I have? Willow had a great showing, I thought.
But, I thought she did that. She did a wicked pounce on the Red Velvet. Using her size against Velvet really, I mean, that really got you into it, you know. She made it look great.
Yep, and then Red Velvet got the corkscrew kick and then won in 5 minutes and 16 seconds. And if I'm not mistaken, it almost sounded like the crowd was booing during the win.
I wrote down there was a chorus of boos. And I was kind of wanting Nightingale during this match. She really showed what she could do in that ring. And I think that should be a wake-up call to Tony and say, hey, give her more of the big shows.
Yeah, if anybody deserves a spot on this roster, it's her.
Yeah, she's great. And then we had backstage with Lexi Nair, and she's with Tony Nese. And Nese just rants how he's the hottest new signing to AEW, how he wants more, etc. And in walks Smart Mark Sterling. He pulls out his card, gives it to Tony needs his proper legal representation. And then him and Nese walk off together to go talk. So he's possibly building up a little stable of his own, Smart Mark.
I really enjoy that because, you know, he's staying a character on the show. He's not on it a ton. And, like, when he is on there, you know, he's not scene stealing, but he's really, like, he plays his part well. Like, last week, we saw a new association with MJF. If he gets Tony Nese under his wing, that could be interesting. And this could be something that could help. You know, obviously, MJF doesn't need it, but this is something that could help Tony Nese, you know, advance along.
And hopefully it does, because Tony needs talent. If you ever watched him on 205 Live, he was pretty phenomenal.
Oh yeah, and even before he went to WWE, he was on Evolve, and he was such a good, you know, just member of the roster. You know, he would do like middle of the show matches that were just phenomenal. And I think, I don't know if he's going to go to any kind of championship spot with AEW, but he could definitely fit in well.
He'd be a great mid-carder. And there's no shame in that.
No, especially if you're, like, providing solid matches, like, you're going to be a lot of people's favorites.
Definitely. And then that leads into the main event, where we have Mark Henry in the split screen announcing into Wheeler Yuta, who's the ROH Pure Champ, versus Jon Moxley. And the match... He's finishing up his entrance, headed towards the ring, and out comes Wheeler Yuta, Tope Suicida, out of the corner, and just fighting. They brought the fighting into the crowd, and finally brought it back into the ring and got the match started. This was a phenomenal match all the way.
Yeah, I wrote down, is this the ultimate test for Yuta in the Blackpool Combat Club? The match was blood-free until Moxley threw Yuta into the stairs, and then...
Well, he actually curb-stomped him on the stairs, too.
Oh, wow. Yeah, so he really busted him up, and this is where Yuta started bleeding, and it just continued.
He must have taken some aspirin or something, because he was bleeding bad, like a stuck pig.
Yeah, you could see, like, right as they got the first shot of it, you could see, like, considerable amounts dripping on him. And then, you know, later in the match, he kicked Moxley's head in like Danielson would. He kicked out of a paradigm shift, which I was very surprised to see.
I thought that was the end of the match, and he kicked out. They got me on that one.
And then he got hit with a regal knee, a paradigm shift, and he kicked out. And then he finally passed out in, I think, a rear naked choke. And I was surprised. Like, obviously, Moxley, I wasn't surprised to see him get the win in 1240. But it was the blood. It was Yuta's heart that he put into this match. And afterwards, Regal came out to shake his hand. He came out with Danielson. And there was some hesitancy. And eventually, Yuta did shake his hand. So, is he in the Blackpool Combat Club now?
That remains to be... One would think so. One would think that was kind of his initiation.
Yeah, but it's almost... You almost want to draw this story. You could keep telling it. Like, he wouldn't even need to necessarily join this week. Even if they stretched it out 2 weeks from now, I think they could still pull it off. I'm interested to see how they eventually do it.
Yeah, me too. It's definitely going over big, and it was a great way to end Rampage, I thought. Well, I
picked a high bar for next week. I'm wondering if next week's could compete with this.
Geez, I don't know. And then we got the Battle of the Belt. And
it's going to be a busy week this week.
It is. Another busy wrestling week, my friend. Well, I picked for my wrestler of the week. It was the obvious choice, Wheeler Yuta. And
that is
a
really good one.
Yeah, I couldn't think it. No one else came to mind at this point. And there was a lot of great wrestling and wrestlers too. I'd say Samoa Joe a close second. I gave both shows 4.5 chair shots. These were excellent shows.
You said 4.5?
Yeah.
That's exactly where I was with the rating. But my wrestler of the week, looking through my notes real quick, because I got to give it to Trent Beretta. Only because I feel like when you heard Moxley Yuta, that almost took like your attention for Rampage. But the match that Trent had with Danielson to kick off the show, I thought was amazing. And like, if you know Trent, it's not so surprising. But right, the fact that he stood out on what was already a packed show was what made him my wrestler of the week.
I think that's an excellent choice as well. Trent did an awesome job. It was just two great shows all together, and it's been a great week. Tomorrow what are we going to be covering tomorrow? Bloodsport and Planet Death kind of combo?
Bloodsport, I can give quick notes on the Mark Hitchcock Memorial Super Show. I can speak on Ring of Honor. What we'll do is we will do like a WrestleMania weekend recap of shows. And, you know, we won't go like too in-depth on each, but we'll kind of give you an idea of what we were able to watch from the WrestleMania week of shows outside of the WWE.
Yeah, it'll be an interesting show, but we'll try to cover as much as we can for everybody, because it was a lot. The collective alone was a lot of wrestling.
Yeah, I have just barely gotten my notes finished for those shows, and there's still like 5 shows I haven't been able to watch from the weekend that I want to watch. So,
yeah.
WrestleMania weekend is a wild ride every year.
It gets wilder and wilder. It's like I like it. The fans benefit greatly from it.
And I will say it's much better to do it this way than to actually do it while down there for WrestleMania weekend, because while like going to a WrestleMania weekend in person can be fun, it can be hell getting from show to show in enough time. Because me and a buddy, we went to WrestleMania both in New Orleans and in Orlando. And Hi. Typically there'll be like a WrestleCon building and there'll be like a GCW building. And sometimes the shows are so close together that you'll have to leave a show early to be in traffic to make it to the next show in time. And right. It can be a headache.
Yeah, I could see that. I hopefully will go to WrestleMania one day. I'm not a big WWE fan at all, but it's just one of those things to kick off your bucket list, you know?
Yeah, and I mean, even if you don't go to WrestleMania, now there are enough events over the weekend that you could go to the town and not have to attend Mania to enjoy like everything they have to offer.
Well, after seeing the WrestleMania card alone, I would definitely go to all the GCW events over WrestleMania any day.
Yeah, the tough part is, and I learned this in Orlando, is that occasionally shows will work around Mania. And that was especially bad because we went to a show. It was a Wrestling Revolver show in Orlando, but it was like the night of Mania. It was like after Mania. Right. So the show started when Mania ended. And that was the one where Roman defeated Taker and Taker left his boots in the ring.
Oh, okay.
The show, and the show didn't start till like 12:30, maybe 12:40, to accommodate everybody leaving Mania.
Right.
And I don't know when the show ended, because probably at about 2:30, I asked my buddy for the car keys, and I just went to sleep in the car because it was way too late. And it wasn't late like Joey Janela's spring break late. I went to the first Janela's spring break that started at midnight.
Right.
And that started on time, but you know, it had that weird like after midnight vibe to it, and it was so goofy.
That's kind of, well, Planet Death started at midnight too.
Yeah.
It did have a different kind of feel to it. I don't know if it's the energy of the crowd or
I think it's the energy of the crowd, and it's the time they're up at, because the second Joey Janela's spring break, I believe it was, where it was Janela versus Sasuke in the main event, and that went on at like 3 a.m. that time. But I remember being there for the clusterfuck battle royal, just wondering when it was going to end. Like, I was getting a kick out of it, but it was just so late, and they would just keep bringing out entrants, and I'm like, let us go.
Right. I could see that. So
that's a little insight into what it's like to try and maneuver around Mania weekend. And like Stagger Lee said, we'll bring you highlights of our favorite events from this past weekend.
Definitely. We'll have our notes and be ready to go over it for all you indie fans and GCW fans. It'll be a treat. Also, ROH fans. We'll cover it all as much as possible, guys, as much as possible, and I once again would like to thank you guys so much for giving us a listen. Tell your friends, like, great review and all that happy stuff. You keep us going.
Join the Facebook page, join the Facebook group. Let us know what you like. Let us know what you want to hear more of.
Yeah, just let us know. Not enough people are talking on there, so start talking.
Definitely.
All right. Well, that's It's Unscripted Violence. Thanks so much, Joe.
No problem.
Appreciate you, bud. And we'll talk to you guys tomorrow night.
Talk to you then.